Mulder's getting overexcited. Scully's trying to talk him down. There's a whole plot line about stem cells. Scully turns herself into a stem cell expert doctor after a Google search on which she typed in, I swear to God, stem cell research.
Cool.
Basically, she's going in and dumping stem cells into this kid's fucking skull, and minutes before did a Google search. This is basically how to stem cell brain surgery.
How do you stem cell?
The network children ask for it by name. The Defenestrict Media Network.
What happens when mixtapes meet memes? This is Gen Zex. Join JM Bell and Braxton Bunnell as they break down the news, music, movies, trends, and moments that shape Gen X and the world Gen Z is creating right now. We're judging the worlds that raised us, from landlines to smartphones. This is Gen Zex. The culture that was versus the culture that's trending.
You are listening to the world's greatest multi-generational pop culture podcast starring Braxton.
That's me.
And me. That's me.
It's good to hear starring next to my name.
Isn't that fun?
It is very fun.
Yeah, it's tasty. JC was making fun of me when we were recording earlier today about starting new podcasts at the drop of a hat. I'm like, the only thing Kevin Smith has on me is success and money. But I can start a podcast like nobody's fucking business.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, before we get started, you're going first this week, but before we get started, I watched the new Chris Carter director's cut of X-Files, I Want to Believe, Wacht Frankenstein.
Okay, I saw that finally came out, but I haven't had a chance to watch it yet.
It is one of the best episodes I've seen.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. Yeah, it's the first X-Files movie felt like a movie.
Mm-hmm.
This felt like the most episode.
Cool.
It really did. I mean, some of his character top-down shots, you know, everything. Amanda Peet is in it. I'd forgotten.
Oh, cool.
Billy Connolly. And then, you know, of course, Gillian Anderson and David Duchovny are in it. It was better than I remember it. So I'm guessing that's the cut.
That's the edits.
Yeah, the new director's
cut. Back in.
Yeah. It never felt like a horror movie.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it felt like a weird ass political thriller.
Okay.
With its new pacing.
I like political thrillers.
No, it's good. I mean, it's good. I have no complaints. I just, you know, makes me want to see the first movie again.
Mm-hmm.
I loved that. I loved the whole scene in the first movie where they're dealing with the bomb.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and he's in the wrong building, but it turns out he's in the right building. So I always thought that was a fun piece of business.
I forgot Exhibit was in the second one.
Is that who's that?
He's a rapper. He plays Agent Mosley Drummy.
Oh, the angry guy.
Yeah, that's Exhibit.
Okay.
The rapper from didn't he do MTV's Pimp My Ride?
I do not know, sir.
Yeah, Exhibit was MTV's Pimp My Ride.
Okay.
Where they just shove a full fish tank into the back of a Kia Soul.
Like you do.
Because the owner mentioned owning a fish.
He likes fish. We'll give him fish.
We're slamming a fish tank into the back of this Toyota Supra.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then it's got 24-inch chrome on it too.
So it was fun going back with the gang. You know what? The movie's what, 20 years old at this point?
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that little bit of misdirection where Scully's talking to, according to the subtitles, man in bed. You know, and it's mm-hmm. and it's David Duchovny doing a voice until it's time for him to sit up and show you that Mulder and Scully finally live together
mm-hmm.
or are at least sharing a bedchamber together. And you're just like, oh, yeah. And then you get no payoff at all.
Oh, yeah.
None.
I will say I'm very excited for the X-Files comic series that's coming back.
Yeah, I hear it's going to be good.
Dynamite's doing it. I'm looking at the design for Mulder. They got Scully pretty on. I'm not sure how I feel about Mulder's face.
Yeah.
A ton.
Is that just the artist?
Yeah, just the artist. His face looks a little too long, I think, is my problem. Because I'm looking at, there's a picture of Mulder like right above it.
I am looking right now. This is really exciting to listen to, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah, this is great.
Yeah, this is great.
This is great podcast material.
Yeah. No, I don't know. It was all right.
I mean, as the highest praise that I think it could receive is it's a long X-Files episode.
It really is. But I did enjoy it, and it has all the classic X-Files tropes. You know, Mulder's mm-hmm. getting overexcited, Scully's trying to talk him down, that sort of thing. But overall, it was really good. There's a whole plot line about stem cells. Do you remember this?
No.
This may have been added back in, but Scully turns herself into a stem cell expert doctor after a Google search on which she typed in, I swear to God, stem cell research.
Cool.
It might have been stem cell treatments, but basically she's going in and dumping stem cells into this kid's fucking skull.
Mm-hmm.
And minutes before did a Google search. It was basically how to stem cell brain surgery.
How do you stem cell?
You know, so it's this wonderful B storyline, you know, of Scully, who's left the FBI and gone back into practice as a doctor. And she's got this young patient that she's trying to save. And the hospital's trying to kick him out, because there's no treatment for what he has except for this relatively insanely painful stem cell thing.
Mm-hmm.
And she does. She goes to her computer and she types in stem cell treatment and she makes some printouts. And then she goes and starts performing surgery on this kid and then comes back and finishes going through her research.
Oh, okay.
Because she finds things she hadn't seen the first time. Including Russian experimentation on keeping decapitated animals alive.
I have read about some of that shit. That shit is disturbing.
Yes. Yes.
That's insane.
But that was apparently the part of the stem cell treatment research she skipped.
Oh, okay.
Because she's like, oh, no. And she calls Mulder. And I was like, okay, that's a pretty lazy piece of writing right there.
Mm-hmm.
But it was just too much fun being back with Mulder and Scully. I it was fun. I enjoyed it. I don't know when I'm ever going to watch it again. Billy Connolly's performance, for as uncomfortable as his character made me, was really quite good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because Billy Connolly, he's not really an actor, and yeah. I would say, other than Mrs. Brown, this is the most acting I've seen him do, and he did it really, really well. So
Well, cool. I'll have to actually watch it because I've been waiting for that to come out.
Yeah. It's only, what, 2 months late?
Yeah, only.
Yeah. I do not know still what Vacht Frankenstein means as far as the rewrite of the title. I don't know why that's different.
My initial guess is that it's referring to the cut of the movie now being Frankenstein.
Well, I mean, and there was the doctor that was building people out of parts.
Yeah.
I just don't know why it's in German when everybody in there was Russian. I don't know. Well. Chris Carter's never going to make sense to me. I'm just going to enjoy what he gives me.
No, yes. Yes, I will lick the plate clean. Thank you.
I can't wait for Kugler's X-Files.
Yeah, I keep getting clickbaited about that series. Because when the comic got announced, I think I can't remember what website did it, but they were like, Smulder and Scully return in the new X-Files. It was like, the comic.
Oh, yeah. Well, there you go. All right, what do we got? Chris Carter. Christ, it looks like the last time he worked was in 2018.
Oh, yeah?
You think... I wonder, did the X-Files make him enough money? Because the only things he's worked on after X-Files was Millennium, which I don't believe you've seen. Have you seen Millennium?
Mm-mm.
So good. So good. Ended before its time. The Lone Gunman. X-Files, I Want to Believe. And more of the X-Files, the newer seasons.
Yeah, I think he's just living off that X-Files money.
Huh.
Which, like, good for him.
Very good for him. Yeah, I liked those, the new season.
Mm-hmm.
The newest season, the 2018 season. I thought that was pretty fucking funny.
Yeah, it was really fun.
Yeah, I did enjoy that. Anyway, I believe you are presenting your IP today first.
Yes, I am.
Well, then by all means, sir, on your way.
All right. Let's see. On May 12th, a massive 7.9 magnitude earthquake hit Sichuan, China, resulting in tens of thousands of deaths and fatalities. I should probably say that we're going back to 2008.
That's a good start.
Before I jump into the news. In the U.S. Democratic primaries, Barack Obama secured a crucial edge over Hillary Clinton in the superdelegates, moving closer to nomination.
Fuck yeah, he did.
Yeah. He got nominated so hard in that election.
Nominated his ass off.
Mm-hmm. Rival factions and Hezbollah reached an agreement in May to end a prolonged political crisis in Lebanon. Big Brown won the 134th Kentucky Derby on May 3rd, though the event was shadowed by a tragic breakdown and euthanasia of runner-up 8 Bells.
Jesus! Don't come in second at the Kentucky Derby. Jesus Christ.
Yeah, apparently. Apparently, if you come in second at the Kentucky Derby, they just put you down.
Shoot that one.
Yeah, they call that one.
Yep.
Topping the Billboard charts for May of 2008, we have Bleeding Love by Leona Lewis, Lollipop by Lil Wayne and Static Major, and No Air by Jordan Sparks and Chris Brown.
I know none of those.
I know Lollipop by Lil Wayne, but that's because I listened to Lil Wayne's other stuff. In the box office, sitting at $202 million and second place, Indiana Jones and the Crystal Skull.
I don't care. Other than Shia LaBeouf, I liked that movie.
Also on the top box office for May, we had The Chronicles of Narnia, Prince Caspian, What Happens in Vegas, Sex in the City, Speed Racer, which I will again say criminally underrated.
I need to watch that.
It's so good. It's the Wachowskis. If it helps, Brandon Sanderson came out and said it was a 10 out of 10 like a few days ago.
Yeah.
I know you like that guy.
I do. I do. I like his novels. I don't need him telling me what the fuck to a movie. I
don't know what media to enjoy.
Yeah, why don't you go roll around in your money some more, Scrooge Sanderson?
And then topping the domestic box office for May of 2008 with $272 million is Iron Man. I love this movie. I don't think that's a controversial opinion to like the first Iron Man.
No, it was extraordinary.
Oh yeah, it was amazing. It was, you know, first MCU movie. It started this entire saga that we're now seeing happen in real time, which I have my gripes about. I feel like the MCU is starting to have the same issue that the comics had, where it's just kind of unapproachable and you have to watch everything before to get the new one.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, I had Matthias down for a couple days this last week, and I'm like, I want you to watch the Marvels, because Matthias really enjoys joyful chaos. It makes him laugh, and I love to hear this kid laugh. So we watched the Marvels, and he understood kind of who everybody was, and we did that. And then the next day, I'm like, I want you to watch Thunderbolts. And he says, okay, fine, I'll watch Thunderbolts. And then the credits don't even start, and he's like, I don't know anybody in this movie, do I? I'm like, you know what? I don't know, buddy. So he went on to the YouTubes and found a watch leader that explained everybody in the movie and their backstory up till the movie starts.
Okay.
And then we watched the movie. You know? And that really, to me, sort of paints your point of, yeah, Marvel is at the point where you kind of have to know shit going in, or else.
Yeah, it's such a far cry from where this massive franchise started. Because, I mean, this you could see they were planning things in the beginning, because, I mean, Tony's convoy is ambushed by a terrorist group called the Ten Rings.
Yeah.
And so there's all these little things that you can see they were building to. And don't get me wrong, I really love everything from Iron Man to Endgame. That's like, you know, what I grew up with. That's my golden years. I was there at like nearly every premiere after, I want to say, Ragnarok.
Okay.
So not a ton of them. As my family, we grew up pretty poor, so I didn't get to see Iron Man in theaters. I watched Iron Man for the first time as a media file on my PlayStation Portable.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Yeah, so I had this one on my PSP. I used to watch it over and over and over again, because at this point I was already into comics to a point. My dad had been buying me the Ultimate Brian Michael Bendis Ultimate Spider-Man, the digest size.
Yeah.
And so I've been enjoying comics, and this really got me more into them. But it also set up this kind of, I don't know, I guess a love for a big overarching story. Like, yeah. I liked the idea that even in this, you could still tell that there were things bigger than Tony that were happening.
Yes.
Like, because, I mean, Fury shows up at the end and Stark's home and invites him to the Avengers Initiative.
Sort of.
A little bit, yeah.
Yeah.
He talks to him about the Avengers Initiative.
Yeah. Yeah, it was, you know, I noticed the Ten Rings in the back, and we kept going with that, you know, as an overarching story. I, you know, as a youngin', fell in love with overarching stories with my first multi-book story series. It was more than a trilogy. It had five books. You know, so it was a pentatilogy.
Pentology?
Thanks, buddy. And yes. Did I mention I'm failing math right now? I really am. It's on my nerves.
I was never good at math. Still am not.
Yeah, I'm really bad. That's too bad. I wish you were good at math. I would ask for your help. So... Anyway, I'm sorry. You go ahead.
Oh, I was, I mean, I think that was kind of the end of my point with that, is just this set up something that would just grow to be so much bigger than itself.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a reason I think that the comics industry owes a lot of thanks to Iron Man for kind of making comics cool and making it so being a more so if you weren't like one of the big ones, like, you know, McFarlane, writing comics could be a full-time gig now because people wanted it. And I think for as much kind of derision that the modern Marvel Cinematic Universe gets, I don't see a lot of people really hating on this one. And I think that's because it's just kind of solid. Like,
well, it is solid. It's fun to think about the fact that the reason they could do Iron Man as their first movie was because he was the IP nobody wanted to buy when they had their bankruptcy and sold off the movie rights to their characters. None of the movie companies were like, "Ooh, we'd like that Iron Man."
Didn't they? Because they, I remember, I don't know if this is true or if this was hearsay, but I remember a story about that time where they went to Sony with everything and Sony only wanted Spider-Man.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
So they just took Spider-Man, and I imagine whatever higher up decided that has been excommunicated from the company.
Oh, probably long before. But yeah, Fox ended up with the X-Men. You know, Sony got that. I for the life of me can't remember who the fuck has Hulk.
Oh, was that, because it was whoever did the Incredible Hulk. Was that Paramount?
It might be.
Incredible Hulk.
Yeah,
That one was also 08.
Yeah, same year. And vastly different movies.
Oh, extremely different. Like, the tone is so just so much darker. Which is fine. I mean, I love a good dark Hulk story. My favorite Hulk comic series of all time is Immortal Hulk.
I still like Planet Hulk better.
That's fair. You know, yeah. That's fair. World War Hulk is also amazing.
Yeah. But I do. Immortal Hulk was fantastic. But no, I mean, it was the CGI in Iron Man was better than it was in Hulk.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, Edward Norton did a pretty good job as Bruce Banner. I'll give him that.
I really liked Edward Norton as Banner. I feel like he kind of fit that, like, recluse kind of that Banner is.
Yeah, Mark Ruffalo, for as much as I love him as Banner and the Hulk, and I like the fact that they do the Hulk in a way that looks like Ruffalo,
mm-hmm.
you know, as opposed to the Hulk that what's his name got, just looked like a Hulk, like a generic drawing of the Hulk,
mm-hmm.
and it didn't look like Edward Norton. No, I'd say, the only other thing I always think about when I watch the first Iron Man movie was, as much as I've enjoyed Don Cheadle in the role, you know,
mm-hmm.
what would that character have evolved to look like had Terrence Howard stayed and not been an asshole about the money?
Yeah, I've always wondered that too. And
see,
I,
he was good.
I thought he was good as Rhodey. And I mean, if we want to talk about actors, Jeff Bridges as Obadiah Stane.
Yes.
Was so good.
Yeah. Yeah. Weird ass casting that just ended up being fucking perfect.
Oh yeah. It just worked. Yeah. The Tony Stark built this in a cave with a box of scraps.
Yep. Sir, I'm not Tony Stark. No shit. But yeah, it is a solid movie. It is a good, fun summer popcorn. Enjoy it. It's got so many good hidden layers in it. It's got so many good Easter eggs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's wonderful. The Coulson is just a joy throughout the entire thing. And if he doesn't come back for Doomsday, I'm going to be hurt.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and I mean, the action in this movie is still, like, really good.
Yep.
Every time I watch that scene where he's flying through the clouds getting chased by the fighter jets.
Yeah.
It makes me really sad that we have not gotten a Iron Man game that's not a tie-in to this movie.
Yeah. I got game. I've told you before, for Father's Day 1 year, the ex-wife and the kids got me a PlayStation 3 that I had custody of for that day and lost custody of the next day.
Yeah, the court hearing did not go well that night.
No. But the first game that we rented that I played on it was Iron Man, tied into the movie. And I found it burdensome.
Yeah, I thought it was okay.
Yeah, it was all right.
It was fine. But yeah, I would love to see give it to a studio like Insomniac, like they did with Spider-Man. I'm not saying that Insomniac has to make every Marvel game like everyone on Reddit seems to believe.
No, that new Wolverine looks good.
Oh, it looks amazing. But yeah, that one's also Insomniac.
Oh, never mind.
Yeah.
I didn't know that. Who makes the Arkham games?
Rocksteady.
Maybe Rocksteady should take a swing at it.
I believe I'm going to fact check this, but I thought Rocksteady got dissolved.
Oh, that wouldn't surprise me, which is too bad because those were amazing.
Yeah, let's see.
Which conglomerate bought them and broke them?
Well, it was, I believe they're, I can't remember who owns them, but it was after, I remember seeing something in the news about layoffs at that studio after the release of Suicide Squad Kill the Justice League.
Oh, yeah. I wanted to play that.
It's not good.
Oh.
It's not worth it.
All right.
If you can get it for free, then play it.
Okay.
But yeah, that game, it's I won't get too into video game talk on the Iron Man episode, but it's not worth it.
All right. Let's see what it's running for right now. Suicide Squad. Kill the Justice League right there. It's still $70.
Mm-hmm. And all support for the game it's ended. It's done. It's not getting any more updates. It's not getting more DLC.
Why is it so expensive?
Probably because somebody genuinely believes this game is worth $70. I think I got it for free on the Epic Game Store because they were just giving it away around Christmas time.
Oh.
And I installed it and I played it for about 2 hours. Then I uninstalled it.
Yeah, this looks awful.
It's bad. It's, it's real bad. Yeah, they took everything that made the Batman games cool.
Yeah.
And then paywalled it, put a bunch of cosmetics in, made all the gameplay really boring, and you're just doing the same objectives in an open world over and over again.
Oh, that sounds awful. Yeah, right there. Rocksteady Studios, February 2nd, 2024. It's 2 years old. They're still asking $70 for it.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
I believe they ended support for it not long after it came out, a year and a half, maybe. But yeah, it's rough. And it sucks because Rocksteady, as the Arkham games have shown, are very talented developers.
Here's a review. Not only, honestly, is only enjoyable if you receive the game for free. Yeah. Oh well. Oh well.
Yeah.
So no, September 25th is the re-release of the new retconned version of Avengers Endgame. Oh, in cool. Theaters.
What's the retcon version?
They've added some footage and added some new stuff so that it goes more seamlessly into Doomsday.
Okay.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Yeah. And I'm looking forward to it, but it's not until the end. It's almost my birthday when that comes out.
Okay. Okay. Maybe it's almost your birthday. Maybe we'll go see it together.
All right. I could do that. All right. Well, why don't we take a break? And when we come back on the other side, what's going to be a much shorter half of the show.
In a world where MAGA is banning and burning books, it is a revolutionary act to read. It's Monday in America is a bold collection from the left show's J.M. Bell about politics, family, aging, and the uncomfortable truths we keep avoiding. No talking points, just real life and a divided country. Order your copy of It's Monday in America today for just $14.99 at MondayInAmerica.com. If you're looking to feel hopeful or inspired, or if you're just frustrated and unsure about where we're headed, this book provides a unique look at the life of a Gen X liberal, the challenges and victories, and the question, what kind of world have we built for our children? It's Monday in America. $14.99 at MondayInAmerica.com. It's Monday in America. Better to die on your feet than live on your knees.
What if there was one place where comic book fans could get everything? News, reviews, debates, and deep dives every single week.
And not just we read one issue and Googled the rest kind of takes. We're talking 15 years deep, over 600 episodes.
That's right. The world's greatest comic book podcast has been breaking down Marvel, DC, indie books, movies, and fandom culture long before it was cool.
Whether you're a lifelong collector,
a casual fan who just saw the latest superhero movie,
or someone trying to figure out where to even start,
we have got you covered.
We don't always agree, which makes it way more fun.
Yeah, way more fun.
New episodes every Tuesday.
Real opinions, real conversations.
Zero gatekeeping.
Check out the world's greatest comic book podcast at thecomicbookpodcast.com.
Hey kids, comics!
Hey folks, Jeff here. So, you want to start a podcast? Maybe you already did and it's just not going the way you thought it would. Well, here's the truth. It's not about the mic, it's not about the software, and it's definitely not just about posting episodes. It's about building a show that people care about. That's why I created the Defenestrate Media Podcast Academy. It isn't theory and it isn't fluff. It's a step-by-step breakdown of what actually works. Choosing a name, choosing a topic, building your structure, growing an audience, trying to turn your podcast into a brand, and maybe even a business. If you're serious about podcasting, this is a good place to start. And if you're just tired of guessing, this is how you stop. Check out the Defenestrate Media Podcast Academy and build something worth listening to. You can find more information at theleftshow.com. The week of July 24th, 1985, saw Indian Prime Minister Rajiv Gandhi and Sikh leader Harshand Singh Longawal signed an agreement on July 24th to end the Punjab crisis. U.S.-China relations saw President Reagan meeting with Chinese President Lin Xianyan moved forward with a delayed bilateral nuclear cooperation accord. Amnesty International publicly accused Turkey of widespread and systematic torture of political prisoners. In Chicago, a press conference was held announcing that the Oprah Winfrey Show would expand into national syndication starting in the fall of 1986. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, once upon a time, Oprah was just a local lady.
Oprah was on closed circuit television?
Pretty close to, yeah. She was just on a local news affiliate. Paul Young held the number one slot in the U.S. Billboard chart with Every Time You Go Away. Love that song. And in movies, which is what we're talking about, because that's all I seem to talk about. Back to the Future, directed by Robert Zemeckis, starring Michael J. Fox, was the runaway number one film in U.S. theaters. Wonderful movie. Glorious movie. To watch it was to revel in the genius that was Robert Zemeckis with Michael J. Fox.
Absolutely a culture-defining piece of media.
Yes. It was something that you went to see and you walked out of the theater happy. Yep. Mm-hmm. Unlike my tidbit and morsel of this week, Disney's The Black Cauldron.
I'm interested to hear what you have to say about this, because when you texted me your pick for the week, you said you picked it because you wanted to complain.
Yep.
And I've only ever heard people sing this movie's praises.
That's because they haven't read the books.
Okay.
Now, these are based on a series of books called The Chronicles of Prydian, written by fantasy author Lloyd Alexander. They were published between 1964 and 1968. There's five books. They draw very deeply from Welsh mythology. So the series follows the adventures of Taran, an assistant pig keeper who dreams of becoming a heroic warrior. It's a coming-of-age story. It's like Joseph Campbell himself shat it. Mm-hmm. You know? And so Taran meets a princess and a little creature. Very, very precious. And
we're gonna talk about Gurgi.
Yeah, we're gonna talk about Gurgi. to save his pig, who has the power of prophecy, from the Horned King. That's the first book. The second book, Taran joins a dangerous quest to destroy an evil magical item belonging to the Lord of Anuvin, which was the Black Cauldron. There's the third book, in which Eilonwy is kidnapped and Taran has to go and rescue her. There's the fourth book, where Taran is becoming a young man and travels all across the land to learn more about his true identity and his heritage. And then there's the fifth book, The High King, where he finally fights against the big bad guy that's been bugging us for five books. Mm-hmm. Right? Fluter Flam was in it. Henwin, the pig, was in the first book. And that's it.
Okay.
That's it. And then for some reason, she is returned. So that's the books. The books, to a kid like me, I got the first one in 1978 is when I read it. Mm-hmm. And read the next four as fast as I could talk my parents into buying them, and then read them over and over and over again. I loved these books. I lived in these books as a child. Mm-hmm. And then I find out they're making a fucking movie and it's Disney. Oh my God. Disney doesn't make garbage. Disney makes great movies. This is going to be the best thing ever, Braxton. Oh my God. I'm so excited. I can't shut the fuck up about it. I'm pretty sure my parents thought. Because we went and saw it opening weekend to an almost empty house of people. Mm-hmm. And then I watched it and realized in horror that this wasn't just a movie based on one of the books. This was somehow a movie based on five fucking novels all squished into one.
Hearing you describe that, because I had no idea it was based on a book series.
Yeah.
Hearing you describe that, it really does. They just kind of stitched it all together in a way that kind of made sense.
They grabbed a little there. Mm-hmm. They stuck it all together and made it make no fucking sense. I had not yet been betrayed like this before.
Oh, every young man remembers his first.
Yep. And this was it for me when I realized that movies can hurt. Mm-hmm. They can sting. Yeah,
there's something just there's a feeling unlike any other when you watch a franchise that you love just get absolutely butchered.
Yeah.
In the name of wide appeal.
Yeah.
And it especially sucks when that wide appeal doesn't even pay off and still nobody knows that it was based on books. And now you can't even like say, hey, if you liked this movie, you should go read these. They're way better. Because now you can just be like, don't watch the movie, read the books.
Yeah, pretty much. Pretty much. I sent Lloyd Alexander a letter in 1979, a handwritten letter, asking if I could meet him and he could teach me how to be a writer. Mm-hmm. And he wrote back, which I thought was really nice of him.
Yeah.
Sent me an autograph, a picture, a brochure about him and his writings, and then a little note telling me that I could do anything I wanted as long as I worked hard enough at it. That's how we used to talk to kids back when we lied all the time. You know? But I thought it was touching. I thought it was touching that a writer would write me back.
Oh, sure.
Fill the envelope with fun stuff. You know, it made me love him even more. But, yeah, it was such a crushing disappointment. And then I haven't read these books in 40 years. Mm-hmm. I haven't touched them since this movie, to be honest. And watching the movie made me so angry all over again that I want to buy the books. I'm pretty sure I got my kids a copy and then just never followed up with them on it. But so I think somewhere in my storage unit or that the kids might have, those books are already bought and I can get my hands on them and I don't have to buy them. But I do want to take another look at him and see what I liked so much about him as a kid, knowing how disappointed I was with this fucking cartoon. This awful cartoon. Sure.
Yeah, so, it looks like, oh yeah, you can get all the, like all five online in a big set for like $45.
Well, it's a little out of my tax bracket.
I understand. That's $45.
Yeah.
Books, it looks like just one of them's like $7 for the paperback.
That is nuts. They're so short. You know, longer than this movie would get him credit for, but still short. They're just little itty bitty books.
There's a sixth one.
I don't know. So what?
There's a sixth one.
When did that come out?
Let me see. It's called The Foundling.
Oh, yeah. I've read that.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. It's a companion piece as opposed to not really a sixth one.
Oh, gotcha.
Yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense.
He wrote that one later. No, I'm looking it up right now. But I don't know what I felt bad as I was watching it that I was making you watch it.
Okay. So growing up, I did not watch like as much, at least I don't remember watching as much like Disney animated stuff as like my siblings did.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously I was obsessed with Toy Story because that came out when I was a kid. But it's interesting to go back and watch these older Disney movies because I genuinely think the animation in this is still beautiful. Like it's still holds up. It's just gorgeous. And every single like background still like throwaway still shot they do is just like just the most gorgeous landscape painting you've ever seen. And then Gergi came on screen and I wanted to turn the movie off.
Yep.
I have such a, I guess one of the most jaded parts of me, is my distaste for, small marketable characters. Like there are still some that I enjoy and I find cute, like despite how the Star Wars sequels did, I still love BB-8.
Oh, you know who I love was that little triangle robot in the third movie. What was his name? Dio?
I think so, yeah.
And
or like the one from, you ever play Jedi Survivor?
Yeah.
Jedi, I can't remember what the first one was called. It wasn't Jedi Survivor, was the second one.
Yeah, but I know which one you're talking about.
But yeah, the little droid that he has.
Yeah, that was good.
Yeah.
But I really liked the little guy in the third one, the one that had been abused and just wanted to be loved. And every mm-hmm. time somebody tried to touch him, he's like, no, thank you.
Oh, yeah.
And he was just sweet. It was a sweet little robot. I digress. But yeah.
I will still enjoy movies with those types of characters.
Yeah.
If they don't talk. And Gerky does not shut up when he is on screen. Every second of silence is filled by something Gergi has to say.
Mm-hmm.
And by the end of it, I did not feel bad when he fell into the cauldron.
You do in the books.
Okay.
But he's not as small and he's not as cute in the books. Mm-hmm. But he talks like that.
Okay.
He doesn't talk that much. And that was my thing, is it's like, oh, they wanted to make money on Gergi dolls.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because yes, they really overplayed his importance in the movie.
Yeah, it's every time that he was on screen, it felt like it was adding nothing. He was there to make observations that the characters have already either made or will make in a second.
Yeah. It was for the kids.
And, yeah, it was for the kids. And I understand, you know, a 27-year-old man complains about children's media. But, you know, like, I get it. It's for kids. And I understand that I'm not the target demographic for it. But, you know, this is our show. So
no, we can bitch all we want to. I'm still mad at this movie.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Like, it felt like they were doing that like every second, like every scene had a new small marketable character. Granted, some of them were only in that scene. But like, what was the little guy's name? Creature, or what do they call him? That the Horned King had.
Oh yeah, the little. He's not in the books.
Okay. But something that I did love about this movie is the Horned King's like design.
Yeah, he was pretty badass. Look.
He looked really cool, and I really liked that they committed to him just moving slow, and it felt like every time that he was on screen, there was like a menacing presence.
I will give you that to a point. Every time he interacted with the little goblin, it took all the juice out of him.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
I can see that.
Because it's like he's supposed to be the big bad, and he's like, this better not be your fault. That's like, yeah, he was with you, dude. Seriously.
Yes.
What? Can't be his fault. But they did. They just made it so laughable. It was as I recall, as my young brain feeds me the info, you know, they were much better books. But I'm searching them online right now, and no, I'm not paying $9 for a children's book from the 70s or the 60s.
Valid.
Yeah. But in the ebook version, $35.
It's $35?
For all five of them, yeah.
Oh, okay. I thought it was $7 for the paperback and $35 for the ebook. I was like, how? Is there do they have limited copies of the ebook or something?
Yeah, something like that. Yeah, I don't want to read it that bad. I mean, I do want to read it again, but $35 is still a little rich for me. You know, I'm doing a reread of shit I already own for tax purposes. Tax bracket purposes, I guess I should say. I don't know. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, I have so many books that are just sitting in storage that I just need to give to you because I'm not going to do anything with them.
I'll take books. I need new shit to read. I'm reading the Dresden Files by Jim Butcher again.
Mm-hmm.
Delightful books. Just wonderful fucking books. And they start fun, and they just get deeper and better and deeper and better and deeper and better. And he's 18 books into the series now. And it's like there's no stopping point. You know, like even Robert Jordan thought he'd finish at 10.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Jim Butcher just keeps on fucking writing, and I'm enjoying the hell out of him. So anyway, that's all I've got on this movie. I just wanted to vent my my preteen spleen about just the first time something hurt that had nothing to do with anybody dying. It just had to do with precious IP. And I'd like to point out how I managed to get through the next 40-some-odd years of my life without hating women.
Oh, yeah, it is possible to
to
see a franchise you love get ruined and not take it out on people whose fault it isn't.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I still prize women above all other things.
They are the best of us.
They are. All right, well, what we're going to do now is take this conversation over to Patreon at patreon.com/defenmedia, D-E-F-E-N media. Every week that we record, we go over to Patreon to drop some special content for our Patreon friends and family. It's a low-cost alternative to other forms of entertainment. I swear you get a bigger bang for your buck over there at Defend Media because we provide special content for all of the shows. That's The Left Show, the world's greatest comic book podcast, I Told You So, and this particular gem, Gen's X. So sometimes we drop special essays in there. Sometimes we drop some best ofs. Sometimes, you know, I'll go deep, deep into the vaults and pull out episodes and other special content, goofy shit we've done, and post that. It's the easiest place to find me reading 'Twas the Night Before Christmas from Christmas 2012.
I know it's Christmas time because around every time of year I get that Patreon notification.
Yep, that there you go.
Episode's being uploaded again.
Yep.
And I listen to it every time.
It keeps getting requested. It's nuts. I don't even like Christmas. Anyway, Braxton, thank you so much, buddy. This is fun.
This is always so fun. Thank you.
This is always so fun. All right, folks, thanks for listening. Don't forget to review and rate. Of course, we want the most stars you can possibly give us. But hey, be a little entertaining in your reviews, and you might make a T-shirt.
Yeah.
Yeah. Join us over at theleftshow.com every week, and you can look at our merch store as well. With that said, thank you, Braxton. Thanks for listening, folks. And we will see you next week.
See ya.
Did you like the show? Join JM and Braxton on Patreon. Patreon.com/defendmedia. Each week they record, they upload additional content exclusively for the Patreon family. Patreon.com/defendmedia.